some athletes, although they are high level, but they could do more. And I think that one of the main things we could do, I'll bring up at the end what I recommend for the next time and for doing next researches in these kinds of athletes, because we sometimes think that how, because of them being high level, that they don't have issues, but they have so many issues. They have so many issues.
Hi, Paolo. It's my pleasure to have you at Evidence Strong Show.
Good. Hi, Alex.
Hi.
Thank you.
Briefly introduce yourself. That would be awesome.
Yes, of course. My name is Paolo Antunes. I'm a BSc in Sports Sciences, Master's in Weightlifting Sports Training, and I have an ongoing PhD in Training Control in the University of Extremadura in Spain. I'm a former Portugal national coach. A weightlifting national coach. I'm also the former Portugal Federation head teacher and general secretary, and I'm a former weightlifting athlete. I'm currently a college professor in this area, in weightlifting area. I'm a researcher and a weightlifting coach also.
So you have brains and heart for weightlifting.
Yes, I mix all together.
That's awesome. So I invited you to talk about your recent paper looking at snatch and clean and jerk derivatives and fatigue. I think it would be good to start with the definition of fatigue, what fatigue is in the context yes. of Olympic weightlifting.
Agree. Well, fatigue is a complex process, which we oversimplify it by saying that is when we no longer can perform the designated task. However, fatigue is lack of neurotransmitters, lack of energetic substrate, excess of metabolic waste, lack of self-drive, lack of will, lack of confidence, overthinking bills and taxes. This is my definition of fatigue, because fatigue is a very complex system. It starts at your brain. Your brain figures it out. Your brain figures out what's going on with your body, and it's an intricate process that sometimes you cannot see what's behind it. So this is my best definition of fatigue. Fatigue is one of the most important things in weightlifting and in every sports training, the fatigue management, and it represents the culminate of what you want to bring up from your trainee. You want to train someone, you want that person to develop and to be better each day, and that has always got to do with how much fatigue he has.
It sounds like every second session in weightlifting we end up fatigue.
Yeah. Yes, for sure. I think some of the times coaches cannot see the importance of managing fatigue. They think that if you over fatigue the athlete, it's all good, but it's not always the question. So for me, fatigue has always been the elephant in the room. It has so much importance on periodization. Periodization bases always in managing fatigue, always in bringing up what your athlete has to give you. But with fatigue behind it, you have always to be careful. And we know that nowadays we have things like new diseases like rhabdomyolysis and some cases like those, and we have to be so much careful about it because of this kind of management.
Fatigue is important. You think it is overlooked in the periodization and training and developing athletes. So in your study, you were trying to research it. So
yes.
If you could tell us how you went about it.
I started researching fatigue because I test people. Some of the coaches don't test it, but I test people often. Every week I test people. I try to do the simplest tests because tests annoy athletes. and I try to do as little as possible, but I have to do them. And sometimes I coach so much athletes online. I have very athletes online. And sometimes I rely on what they send me. And I ask, send me a video of you doing this test for me to input on the program and to watch it and to see what kind of fatigue. I use the snatch pull test every week. I test it for the snatch pull test and the loss of velocity. I test the fatigue for the loss of velocity with 100% of their snatch, but only a snatch pull, and that for me is the most important, because I plan the next week according to that. Because if the athlete is very much tired, for instance, if he drops about 30 to 40% of the velocity, I have to cut the volume for the next week. But he's, I have a percentage that I cut. How do you cut? The question is is this one. Okay, he's 40% tired. How do you cut? How much do you cut for him to be better at the other week, but still tired, really? Because we want to tire the athlete for him to adapt, for his body to adapt. You create the stress. You have to wait for the body to adapt. However, you cannot give him light work, because the light work will drop him and he will not adapt. So this for me is the main. And one of the issues that came to me was, okay, but there are some exercises that probably will fatigue you more than others. But how much? We don't know how much. And I started, the first time I did this with my worksheets. I always plan in Excel. And the first time I did this with the worksheets, what I did was I made a mathematical fraction with the range of motion of each exercise. Meaning, if the exercise has more range of motion, it will fatigue you more. This one was the previous hypothesis. If it has more range of motion, it will fatigue you more. Because we know on physics that if you have more range of motion, you probably have more work. So this one was my first hypothesis before I did the research. And then I came with the research and it was not like
that. Let's pound that.
Yeah.
We have to unpack a few things. So first, snatch pull. Do you use snatch pull as an exercise in your programming?
Yes.
So your lifters are very accustomed to the exercise. It's not a new exercise. It's the exercise they do all the time.
Yes. It's extremely important for them to, for instance, I don't do snatch tests for snatch pull tests for rookies. I don't do that. It's useless because the technique is not good. The bar will go apart from the athlete. If it goes apart from the athlete, the momentum arm will go up and not good. So useless, completely useless, and will give you wrong numbers. So I only do this for experienced athletes, advanced athletes. And really those are the ones that are more close to their threshold, of course, their physical threshold are the most important ones. So this is the main thing that we have to understand, is that you have to do what you must do for each athlete. Each athlete needs a different thing than the other one, especially in weightlifting. I was a weightlifter and I know what I thought at the time when I was, I still lift a few things, but when I was more active doing it.
So the goal of any program in weightlifting is to make the athlete better, but the more elite the athlete is, the closer we get to the threshold, the physical and mental threshold. And if we cross it, especially continuously for longer time, the athlete is at higher risk of sustaining an injury. And injuries in weightlifting are a serious business, so we try to avoid them at all costs. So your idea was that monitoring how athlete is fatigued week by week will let you to early detect any excessive overload and possibly modify the training to keep them at the level of fatigue you want them to be, no more, no less.
Yes, that's it. Because in weightlifting, we have, like I was saying about fatigue, we have some things that bother us. For instance, sometimes athletes came and they said, "Oh, I'm so tired today." That I'm a bit against the RPA thing. It's so much of a failure, RPA, at least for these kinds of sports, of course. If you're talking about a cycling sport, if you talk about a sport that you do for hours, then RPA could be a good thing. But in these kinds of sports that you have bursts of energy and such, it's not a good tool. So sometimes the athletes came and they said, "Okay, I'm tired today. I'm not going to do it today. I'm not really going to perform good today," and such. Okay. And I started to do a pull. He did it. Put more weight. Put 100% of you do on your snatch. Okay. Do a pull. They did a pull. The pull was fast. So I was always saying, sometimes it happened, not always, but many times it happened that they came with a fatigue mind. This is the most important important thing. It was a fatigued mind, but it wasn't a fatigued body. But the mind says to the subconscious says to the conscience, okay, we are fatigued. Don't do that. You're going to fail. So this was the main thing. And I started to understand that wasn't the case. We have to have numbers, something that give us real things and not just, I think it's good. I think you're fast. I think you're good enough. I think it's not bad. So for me, the most important thing in weightlifting is that, because we already have numbers. We know numbers. We know how much the athlete does. We know the weight. We know the volume. We know some of the variables that are most important.
Oh, why did you decide to use snatch pull as your testing modality or testing exercise?
Yes, good question. I think that it's the exercise that most characterizes our sport, because snatch pull, use snatch pull in most of the exercises. When you don't use snatch pull, it's a clean pull, but the only thing that changes is the wide and the hand wide. And so it for me, it was the obvious.
Could we go now into the test, how you perform the test or how your athletes have to perform the test?
Yes, of course. Okay, the athletes need to do a warm-up. This was a particular issue, because at first I thought of a standardized warm-up. I thought about doing a standardized warm-up. But you know how athletes are with their warm-up. So I did, okay, do your warm-up. I've came up with, okay, the athlete needs to do his warm-up, needs to be comfortable with his what he's doing, and it's the better way. Okay. And I did this. I regret it. I regret it mainly because of the first exercise. The first exercise was muscle snatch. Muscle snatch is an exercise that is so explosive. You have to push the bar all over. It's the biggest ROM. It's the biggest range of motion.
So sorry, because muscle snatch has different names in different coaching camps. So for you, muscle snatch is from the floor to overhead in one movement, no contact, no
movement. Always contact. Yeah,
it could, okay, always contact.
I think that I've already seen the, especially the Russians do always with no contact. But for me, that one is a muscle snatch, no contact, with no contact. But the other way, I think that the muscle snatch must be done with the same kind of pull that you do with a conventional snatch. And this was the first issue. The first issue is that half of the people, half of the sample, were in fact quicker on their second snatch pull test, meaning after they did the muscle snatch, or the tests after the muscle snatch was faster than the baseline.
So you tested them first doing the snatch pull.
Yes. They first warmed up. They warmed up and they did some pulls. And then we put 100% snatch pull test. Do the snatch pull test. They did the snatch pull test. Okay, we take the measure. For instance, 2 meters per second. Okay, 2 meters per second. After it, they did 4 sets of 3 reps of muscle snatch with 60% of their PR, of their maximum. And this was the issue. I'll talk to you about it afterwards. And then afterwards, you could expect already a fatigue. Yeah. So you do the first snatch pull test, and then you do 4 times 3 muscle snatch. And then 1 minute after, you do the snatch pull test again. You already expect a decrease in velocity. Half of them didn't get it. Half of them didn't get it. Meaning, but this might have an explanation. The first explanation could be a bad warm-up, and this one is the first explanation. That's why I said that next I will have the warm-up standardized, and everybody will do the warm-up standardized. The other explanation will be that this is a post activation potentiation effect, and really we could have found here a thing that is so much important for the strength and conditioning people, that is you have an exercise that will not fatigue you and will prepare you for what you are going to do. People on football, on soccer, everywhere are doing post-potentiation activation before the games, and maybe they could start doing muscle snatches. Another thing is that how did we choose for the volume, and how did we choose for the intensity? The intensity was based, we have to have it equalized, and the one that set up that number was really the muscle snatch, because you cannot do 70% of the snatch in muscle snatch. You cannot do. So 60% was the number that, because we have in some books and some researches say that muscle snatch will be 60 to 65% of your snatch, around that. So we established it in 60% of the snatch, and everybody could do it, everybody. Some of them weren't quite used to do muscle snatch. Their coaches didn't put muscle snatch in their workouts, but everybody could do it. This one was the main. So 60% of snatch, it had to be equalized that way, because it had to be 60%. So this one is the main. Afterwards, how much volume were we going to do? We think that the volume was not very important, because we are going to do the same volume with every exercise. So it will be equalized. When we're going to lose, we're going to lose the same way for the other one. So it was not important. However, we thought about doing what we conventionally do with 60% of the this workout. So we came up with the 4 sets of 3 reps. This one was the way to do it. The test came out good, came out perfectly. Everything worked out good, and no issues at all, except when we were doing the data, we saw that the muscle snatch really was faster in some athletes than the baseline snatch pull test.
Should we go through other exercises? What else did you test?
Snatch, snatch pull, muscle snatch, power snatch, back squat, clean and jerk, power clean, high hang clean, and hang power clean. These were the chosen ones, and we started to go around with them. First, we had some testing for the testing, and yes, these were really the ones that that stand out, and we wanted to know if they were really different, if they have different numbers between them, and we came up with good numbers. We came up with really good p values, really low p values, and with the good effect sizes, and this was the main thing that drove us to do it and to go forward with the study.
The volume and the intensity was the same. Was it 60% for sets of three?
Yes, except for back squat. Back squat was 60% of the back squat.
Of course. All right, makes sense. So you tested all the athletes. You had females and males. Were they, what level were the athletes? National
level? National level, yes. They were national level. Yes. However, one thing that I always point out is that some athletes, although they are high level, but they could do more. And I think that one of the main things we could do, I'll bring up at the end what I recommend for the next time and for doing next researches in these kinds of athletes. Because we sometimes think that how, because of them being high level, that they don't have issues, but they have so many issues. They have so many issues.
Issues are at every level in weightlifting. That's sport. The sport is issues everywhere.
For sure.
All right. So you tested. What did you find?
Okay. I find that some exercises are really very different from others in terms of fatigue. Some exercises will fatigue you more than others. For instance, we did the overall women and men. We did this comparing. But also, of course, we need to go into men at one side and women at the other side. It's the best thing. And what we found out, it was first of all the variable that it was really according to the p values and everything, it was a peak velocity variable, not wrong, not mean velocity, anything. Peak velocity variable was the variable to have into account. This one was the main thing. I also thought that wrong was the variable to look at, but it was not the case, except in clean and jerk. And we'll talk about it better about that afterwards. In women, we have the back squat was the exercise that was the most fatiguing. Afterwards was the snatch pull. It was 86% fatiguing. And afterward was the snatch, 71% fatiguing. So we take into account the thing we have done, it was taking into account the one that fatigued us the most, that it was back squat. We pulled out the relative difference from that. So that one is one in mathematical terms. That one is one. Snatch pull is 0.8. Snatch is 0.7, meaning 71%. So these were the main finds. As I told you, muscles that we couldn't find a difference because we hadn't had a p-value because it crossed the zero, so we couldn't have it done. But we already talked about it, what came up with it. On the men's side, this one was on the woman's side. On the men's side, it was not the same. Back squat did not fatigue us the most. Very interesting. Snatch pull test. Our snatch pull was 70% fatiguing. For us, for men, the max fatiguing was snatch. Yes. For us, snatch was the max fatiguing. And the power snatch was just 60% of fatigue. The muscle snatch came up with the same. The muscle snatch, we hadn't had a consensus because of the changes. But it's also interesting to know that we are so different. And also, again, I think that there is an explanation for this. We know already that men have more type 2 fiber types than women. Women have more slow twitch fibers. Men have more fast twitch fibers. And snatch needs more fast twitch fibers, meaning that they will fatigue who has more fast twitch fibers. So I think that this one is the main thing that you came up with this. Also, the back squat didn't bring up fatigue to us, like in women. In women did. In women was the... I think that the same way, because snatch, you have to do it fast. Back squat, you don't have to do it fast. You have to do it slower. And you have, of course, when we're talking about resistance training, we're always talking about type 2. But we also have type 1. And if you don't have enough type 2, we'll go for type 1. We know that physiologically. So again, women have more type 1 fibers. So they felt more the back squat that you can do with your own velocity, because these are exercises that you must do them with the specific velocity, meaning that you have to pull your snatch in that velocity or it will not go up and you cannot have time to go down under it. And back squat, no. In back squat, you can do it on your own timing. You can do it slowly. You can do it a bit fast. So for the back squat, especially with 60% of your back squat, you are relaxed. You are kind of relaxed. You don't need to contract fibers, fast twitch fibers the same way. So I think that this was the main issue. This was the main thing for we to look at. For the clean and jerk, for the ROM variable, how was on the men's side, the ROM variable came out with the clean and jerk being the most fatiguing for the men, not for the women. Women did not show fatigue on the clean and jerk, I think it's mainly because it's not that much velocity dependent. I think that the main issue is that the clean and jerk is not that much dependent on velocity as snatches. So on the ROM variable, on the range of motion variable, we found on the men 67%. Like I said, women did not came out with the fatigue on the clean and jerk derivatives. The men came out only on clean and jerk and on clean. Clean came out with 67% fatigue, and clean and jerk came out with the most. Clean and jerk was one. Clean and jerk was the one most fatiguing. Mean power variable, we came out with some numbers, but nothing special. We came out with a large effect size. We came out with p-value, a good p-value. The mean velocity variable, we came out with a reasonable p-value, 0.011. But the mean power variable, we came out with 0.009. So we didn't find anything about this one's because we hadn't had the comparison variable. So we couldn't find anything about the mean velocity and the mean power because of that. Although we could find something behind it, we couldn't say what was it. So clean and clean and jerk are the ones that kill us the most, especially on men's side. Women, not so much. This one was the main thing to draw out of it. I think it was in the peak velocity variable on the snatch, there were expressive results in most exercises, especially in the female group, because of what I was talking about, because snatch derivatives are more faster, are more explosive, and draw more fatigue. Although it is a variable referred to in the literature as volatile, because the literature came out with the peak velocity variable being a bit volatile, and really it is. Clean and jerk is a phase exercise and less dependent on speed. It's you have first the clean and then the jerk. You have these two phases, and it's a bit more permissive. It's more susceptible to compensations and fatigue management. Of course, if you are more fatigued, you rest a bit more here. If you are eager to do it, you then go jacket. Literature has reported that females are really more resistant to fatigue. This is the thing that we've seen in so many studies, that females are more resistant to fatigue, maybe because of the fiber type constitution, I don't know. The volume and the intensity that were used provide to be insufficient to induce fatigue in most movements. Okay, so we haven't had more fatigue in some exercises because probably our volume or intensity were not enough. So again, this gives us insights about certain percentages, certain volumes that we need to comply for we to get adaptation.
Yeah.
I think this is the main thing. This is the issue that goes around the fatigue problem. Of course, we had limitations. Sample randomization was limited because we are not that many here in Portugal. We're not that many lifters in Portugal. So sample randomization was limited. Still was done. We did the advertising of the study and people came in. Another ones I did, do you want to do this study? So it was a randomization, a limited randomization. Very high mental factor that can influence personal records. Of course, we know that in weightlifting, we have mental factor, brutal mental factor. This sample is, for weightlifting, is a good sample, but overall, it's a reduced sample. We know that.
Well, at least females and males, which is amazing because many of weightlifting studies have only met
on two females.
Yeah. In this.
But, yes, but we have a good thing here that at the time, I did those numbers because it was the same percentage of men and women that we had in Portugal. Meaning 13 men, 9 women did the sample for what we had representing our country. However, now we have more women than men doing weightlifting.
Ah.
Yes, yes, we did. And we recently did some meets and some championships, and they all came out with more women than men in several championships lately.
Yeah.
Yes, I think that it's a good start for more research. We need to do more research on this matter. As I told you previously, I didn't find any study on this related to this, the same issue. I didn't find any. It could be, but in weightlifting especially, I couldn't find. Maybe we can find some in resistance training overall, in bodybuilding training, but in weightlifting, I couldn't find any.
Okay, I have one more question. So let's imagine that a coach is very excited watching this interview and they decide they will use your test. So they will use Snatch Pool to monitor their athletes week by week. How they would use the data they will get, how you make the decisions in
decision.
Yeah.
Okay. We know that in fatigue, every sport needs to account into excess fatigue. The general adaptation syndrome, which states that the process your body goes through when you are exposed to any kind of stress, positive or negative, for which we are likely to progress through stress training, promotes its adaptation through strength development. So based on this, what I do is, do I need that kind of fatigue at the moment? Is my athlete far from its contest? If he's far, then I don't need to worry that much. I need to just go to see if he's not too much of a fatigue. He's not going into some kind of overtraining or such, but I will try to maintain him fatigue enough for it to, it's going to come a time that he is going to start and developing. I always input, I do my Excel, I put him in my Excel and I see the charts. I put him in charts always. Charts work very well for me. And I want to see the charts going up. I want to see the pools, the velocity pools coming up. You are starting to see your athletes recovering from the stimulus, and you're going to see the pools going up week by week. And sometimes you don't want to see that. You want to see the fatigue being drawn to the athletes. Okay. And then you know that, okay, it's time for I'm going to pull him up. And we know that on the supercompensation theory, we know that further the stress, further the supercompensation. We know that. So again, the real trick is not to fatigue them too much, for which they could not aim up for the supercompensation. This is the main thing. So what I do is, if I came up with some algorithms, algorithms, things that I'm a number person and I want to see numbers, and I always want to do that. I don't trust myself. So I want to see numbers. I don't trust what I do. So I always want to see numbers. So today I'm going to test my athlete. He's, for instance, 40% under the baseline poll he used to do. Okay, next week I have a worksheet where I do this thing. I pick up the tonnage and I multiply the tonnage for the percentage of the relative difference I've showed you. For instance, snatch, it's for men, snatch is the most. Okay, one. I multiply snatch by one. Okay, I know that this tonnage multiplied by one of the snatch has, I call it a fatigue factor. I call it a fatigue factor of X. So I have, it will draw you a number of 655. Okay, and I have a total. I total the fatigue of each exercise. And then according to that, I will go under, when you have 40, I said that you have to go 200 fatigue factors down for the next week. If you want, I can show you my worksheet.
Of course.
My Excel worksheet. I will show you. What you are seeing is the snatch pull test. Each day we have three. I always input all the pulls. Although I have more emphasis to the quicker one, but I always input everyone. So one day, you see, it's coming up here. Then you'll go down. He was coming up on a moment that I didn't find any use to it because the contest was still far away from that. And then I fatigue him. Here, can you see here? He's down here. And then he does shorter one here. That will he's coming up again, and this is the way I control the athlete. This is the way doing this, observing this, is the way I control the athlete. You can see here, I'm going to put a bit bigger. You can see here that you have two bars. You have the yellow bar and you have the gray bar. The gray bar is the height that you accelerated.
Ah.
Okay. So this athlete is, you can see that he is very consistent with his acceleration. He's a good athlete. This one is my best athlete. Here I have some issues. You can see that in this poll, we are going to see a lack of consistency. He's not consistent with the poll timing. And this one also gives you information about it. I'm going to show you my meso. This is my meso. I have here. I have the mesos, the macros, and I have the mesos here already prepared on my sheets here. This is my mesos and this is my worksheets. Okay, now I have, for instance, an example. I always deload three on, one off.
Mm-hmm.
I always deload three on, one off. We have the fatigue factor. And then I have the fatigue factor is made up with the tonnage that it's here, the tonnage times the percentage of each exercise fatigues you. For instance, if the exercise fatigues you 70%, I'll multiply the tonnage by 0.7. Okay. Okay. This will draw out this fatigue factor. And then for the next session, and then I have the tests here. You see here the tests,
mm-hmm.
in which we have the velocity maximum height and the total max velocity. So this is the total max velocity, the peak velocity, and this one is the height for which we have that maximum velocity. And we're set up. I have these charts here, the intensity and volume, and I have the fatigue and tonnage here. And this is the way I do my programming. This is the way I do. I total the fatigue factor. I manage many things about the fatigue factor. When I program in volume and intensity. For me, what matters when I program initially, I have here the total, the weekly total. I'm going to put this bigger because it's so small. Okay, I have weekly total here and I have total reps, 341 reps, the total tonnage, 47,223. The percentage, it's the mean percentage, 72.89%. So it's the mean percentage. And here I have the fatigue factor. The fatigue factor is a sum, of course, of every other, and it will draw me 33,645. And this one is the main thing I use for going up and down with my athletes, going up and down with the volume with my athletes. But when I do this change, I always look at the fatigue factor only. Only the fatigue factor matters for me here. And this one, I previously didn't take into account the kind of exercise. And now I can take into account that variable, the exercise. So this is the thing. This is my sheet. I have all the microcycles here under. You can see here, I have the microcycles here up to the last day. Okay. And this is the way I do stuff. So this is one of my best athletes. He's 155 snatch. He does 190 clean and jerk. So he's a good athlete. He's got also 230 back squat. So he's very efficient. He hasn't have a very big back squat for the numbers he does. And this is the thing that I use. This is my worksheet.
That's amazing. Thank you so much for sharing. So, a silly question. When you detect that your athlete is too tired for what you want him to be, let's see, it's week 3, you should still go up, but it doesn't when they are too tired. How you calculate the fatigue factor? Do you cut the volume through all the exercises, or you choose the ones that are the most fatiguing? How do you reduce?
It depends on the periodization. Where the athlete stands. For instance, I will cut in every exercise if he's very far from the contest. If he's very far from the contest, I cut a bit of everyone, and it's easier that way. If he's closer to contest and he's being every time more specific, every time doing more exercises that look alike what he's going to do on his contest, snatch and clean and jerk, then I will try to cut on other exercises, not in snatch and clean and jerk. Right? And I always start with the volume. I never start with the
intensity.
The intensity. Again, depending on the periodization where he stands. For instance, if he's on a volume periodization block, I will cut him on the volume because I know that the volume is high, so I will cut him on the volume. If he's on a strength position, and then I will cut him on the intensity. I'll cut because the volume is already down, so you cannot cut the volume when it's already down. So you have to cut it where you're bringing him up, and that way I'll cut him on the intensity. Yes, depends always where he stands on the periodization block.
That's the art.
Yes, it is. I haven't quite mastered it, but I'm I'm on the process.
You did like huge study on it.
Yes, but it's so much more than that. We have issues. We are mostly, I find myself today in a position that I am mostly a psychologist than mainly a coach. This is a psychological sport. It's only you on the platform. It's only you. Everybody's looking at you. Everybody expects something of you. And this messes with the athlete, with the athlete's mind, of course.
Yes. I have two short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift? You personally or you as a coach?
My personally favorite lift used to be the snatch because I was lousy on the jerk. I was a lousy jerker. So I was a good snatcher. And it came out to be my first preferred lift was the snatch. But then I've started to understand the jerk. This is an interesting talk because I've seen two great athletes saying the same thing about the jerk. They were Lu Xiaojun and Piros Dimash. They said the same thing on their jerk. Someone asked them, why do you do Lu Xiaojun squat jerk and Piros power jerk? And they asked them, why did you do those jerks? And they answered the same way. I couldn't understand the split jerk.
Mm.
So I cannot see the problem that way. I see the problem that they haven't got a coach that could explain them the split jerk. This is the way I see it, because I think that the main factor a coach has to be as a good communicator. So when I understood the jerk, I started to be better at the jerk, and jerk started to be my favorite one.
Five times.
Yes. And I tell you one thing that the coach has always told me, and it's the truth. Clean and jerk, it's the one that makes you win contests. Clean and jerk makes you win contests.
What is the saying? You snatch what you can and you jerk what you have to.
You have to, yes. That's it. And that's it. And that's it. That is the main. Of course, technically, snatch is difficult. It's more difficult than clean and jerk technically. But like I told you, the jerk is a so small exercise that you are hard to understand. And it's an issue. It's an issue for you to do your athletes understand the jerk. I think that's it's one of the chimeras of the sport. I think it's that one. I think it is.
Awesome. Let's finish on that. I have one last question. If people want to talk about what we discussed today, or they want to follow your work, where they can find you online?
Online, they can find me on my email, on my personal email, or on Instagram. I have Instagram. I always go on Instagram and I post on Instagram. I repost. I mainly repost on Instagram. I don't post too much, but I repost what my athletes do. And I repost on Instagram.
What is your name on Instagram?
Paulo Antunes. Yes. The Paulo Antunes. The Paulo Antunes. Yes. The Paulo
Elon.
Yes. Something like that. Because there are many Paulo Antunes in Portugal. I have to be a little bit different.
All right. Huge pleasure tonight, Paulo. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you
for your time and for the conversation.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you so much.